The Survivor Know-It-Alls is made possible because of the support of the patrons of Rob Has a Podcast. To find out more about the benefits of becoming a patron, go to robhasawebsite.com/patron. You can see everything that we're doing for our patrons and see that there's no fine print to read there. That's robhasawebsite.com/patron.
The smartest guys around. We're about to break it down like they've won the game a million times.
Well, actually, they didn't really win the game at all.
Survivor Know-It-Alls.
Coming to you live from our respective apartments. Hey everybody, it's a very exciting episode of the Survivor Know-It-Alls. We've got a special guest. We finally got rid of Sesternino, and I'm fortunate to have here with me the great Sophie Clark, a big friend of the podcast and a wise Survivor contestant.
Friend of the pod. I'm so happy to be here.
Yeah, okay. Sophie. Sophie, yeah. What did you think? This is it, the big finale of Survivor Game Changers.
I thought it was good. I thought it was a good finale. I think that the bar was kind of lowered halfway through the season. I had a lot of high expectations for the season, kind of the first pre-jury, and then kind of I thought it went a little downhill. And I thought this was a good finale. A lot of exciting things, a lot of things to make me angry, a lot of things to talk about. So good for a podcaster.
Yeah, it is good for a podcast. If you had told me before the season that this was the final three, I might have just not watched. But like then going into this finale, it's like, oh, I'm kind of excited to see what happens. And yeah. Oh, go ahead.
Yeah, exactly. And I liked that. Even though you might have said I won't watch, the fact that this was the final three that you would have not watched makes it even more remarkable to witness, right? The fact totally. That Troyzan is not just like kind of a loser. He is like the biggest loser ever in all the final tribal cults
not true.
Ever.
No, false. Not true.
I think he barely, I almost tweeted like, is this going to be the first time somebody doesn't speak in a final tribal council? Like he almost became a parody of himself. And then you have Brad Culpepper, who I think has like, after his first season, he kind of outlived even, I mean, he was barely on that first season and he had such a reputation. But no, I thought it was fun.
All right. So let's start like with the big story, okay. You know, Sarah, another affectless game bot, you know, so perfect for, we got the perfect person yeah. to talk about it. Sarah wins. What did you think? Was this the right decision by the jury? Sarah, what are your perspectives on Sarah?
So I say I was a big fan of Brad Culpepper throughout most of the game. I thought, and before I, the last 15 minutes kind of after the show ended, I was trying to remember all the great things Brad did pre-jury because I was just thinking to myself, like how much the post-jury people weight it going into the final tribal council. And, you know, Brad really shined in the pre-jury in a way yeah. that Sarah didn't. And so I going up to this episode, I was a big fan of Brad Culpepper. I was also impressed that as like an alpha male, and I think Ozzy probably feels this way too, as an alpha male, there's so few ways for you to win.
Yeah.
And like Culpepper took the path, right? He took the path of being not too threatening in the beginning, being useful to his tribe, then winning the challenges. Like he did the thing that no alpha male can barely ever do. And he still came up short. But I have to say that after watching the finale, I was rooting for him as much as possible. But I think there are certainly holes in his game. And the social aspect was a big one.
Yeah. I mean, I want to talk about, because I want to talk a little bit about this a little bit later because.
Sorry, Sarah.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. You didn't even mention Sarah. And from my perspective, I think that Sarah is one of the best players ever. And
whoa.
Yes. And I think that part of the reason we don't think so is because she's so bad in confessionals. She's just has terrible at explaining her game. And I want to like bounce this off you. I think Sarah played a game that possibly nobody has ever played in terms of bouncing back and forth between alliances, staying this middle ground, flipping many times. And, you know, we say Tony played that. I think she did it even more than Tony did.
Yeah, no, I have to give a ton of credit to Sarah. I think that her game this season was masterful. The way I think where I can find almost no flaws with it. I can find a few. We can go into it later. But her game incredible game. You can't take it away from her. However, I would definitely argue with her that, with you, that she's a great Survivor player. I think to be a great Survivor player, it implies that that person would be good at Survivor in almost any circumstance. And I'm not sure Sarah is that player. I think that in a lot of ways, the cards were in her favor this season because she came as the person that was the least threatening. And that's a big, big deal. Think about how hard it is for alpha males on every single season to do well because they come in with a target on their back immediately. Basically, everybody this season was the equivalent of an alpha male. They were coming in with a target on their back that screamed, I'm Aubrey. I'm strategic. Like, I'm Ty. I find idols. Sarah came in with no target. And so I'm not sure I want to give her yet the credit of being somebody who could succeed in any season. And you look at her past season, right? And she was less impressive. But I mean, this season, if we want to talk about her, like, holy smokes, she was incredible.
It's such a hard metric. And like, what makes a great player? You're right. Like, it's like, is it someone who can be consistent over time, or is it someone who plays a great game? I mean, you know, you saw Tony, who we for a while been saying, this guy's one of the best ever. You know, he flames out immediately, and it's because of his reputation. So maybe I'll say instead that I think this is one of the great games. Yeah. And then anyone who plays is so subject to the luck of their reputation, especially returning players, right? Like, so much of what goes into returning player season is people's reputation from their previous season, and even on new seasons.
Yeah. Even on new seasons. Exactly. You know, you have people like Brad Culpepper, who even on his first season, he had a target. But I will say that I don't want to like have that take away from Sarah's game at all, right? Like, I think very few people are probably great Survivor players that would succeed in any season. And I think Suri on this season was one of them. And I think that there is a difference between kind of Suri and Sarah. And if I was betting on one of them to do well another time, I would probably still bet on Suri.
Well, that's like making like literally like one of the three best of all time versus something.
Well, that's what I'm trying to say. I'm not excluding Sarah from a huge club. I'm just saying, I don't think, unlike what you said, that she belongs in it.
You're right. No, you're right. And I did say that. You're right. That's fair. So I thought, though, this game that she played, this winning game, was unlike any winning game we've seen before. And it's something that maybe the reason that I'm personally so flabbergasted by this is because it's something that I didn't think could be done. You know, I've always held the Dan Foley axiom that flippers never win, right? And that flipping, it's going to piss people off. You know, your old alliance is going to be furious at you because you betrayed them. Your new alliance is going to be, they're not going to value you. They needed you for one vote. And somehow Sarah played this middle ground where she would flip almost week to week. And I think more than Tony did.
Well, so I have a theory that actually doesn't have a thesis to it, but I'd like for you to explain it, which is that I feel like most flippers are waffly erratic people in ways. You think of Cass, you think of Cochran, you think of Rob Sesternino, you think of you, like people who are playing in the middle.
I'm not a flipper.
Okay. No, I'm not a flipper.
I never flipped.
But like, even
Are you just trying to like diss people?
Yes.
Are you saying they're just dissing nerds?
Well, when I think of somebody who's like trying to play a lot of sides, like I think even of my experience playing Survivor Brooklyn with Andrea and how stressful it was, because I felt like she was playing a lot of sides. And Sarah is somebody who did that, but she is, I think, one of the most focused black and white people to ever play Survivor, right? Like she tells Ty, like, you're at fault, like you're in trouble. And then she says, she finds out some more information. She says, okay, never mind. I'm sorry. I forgive you. Right. It's like,
that's okay. But that doesn't seem like a good tactic. You know, you're saying like, that's somehow better gameplay, like for her to like get really angry at someone.
And then maybe that unlike Ty, who I think maybe does a similar thing as Sarah, right. But did it unsuccessfully. Unlike Ty, who, when he flips, I feel like every time he flips, it's as if a part of him comes off. And he's like disintegrating into something nobody can trust anymore. Whereas Sarah, I feel like every time she flipped, she like kept herself whole and managed to be as firmly in the direction of the new people that she was joining as anybody else within that group, because she's such an extreme waffler. And by that, I don't mean she's like this, but she's like, when she's on your side, that she's really goddamn on your side. You don't feel like it's like, oh my God, what is this person doing? Where do they stand? Like, although she played in the middle, I don't think she ever acted as if she was in the middle, right? She played on either side many different times, but she wasn't playing in the middle, right? She ever said to somebody, oh, I don't know, maybe I'm gonna go with you, maybe I'm not. She was always like, okay, yep, I'm gonna go with you. Maybe she didn't.
But that's a straw man of what playing the middle is. Like, oh, that's like the Ty straw man of it. You know, like, I don't think that's even a useful, I mean, when I talk about flipping, I'm thinking like Spencer in Cambodia, right? Someone who really everyone believed was with him. not someone who was like seemed all over the place. He really had everyone like believing. And then he faces this bitter jury at the end. I mean, you know, and granted, like so much of who wins is based on who they're next to. Right. But like, you know, then Spencer faces this jury of people who are really hurt because they all felt like he was with them and they all felt like singularly betrayed by him. And somehow Sarah was able to avoid that.
I mean, I think we're combined. Now we're trying to combine two different things, right? Like there's probably the reasons Spencer lost and the reasons Sarah won are not solely due to the way in which they flipped. Right. Like there's a lot of other factors involved. I'm just saying that I feel like Sarah was able to flip so many times without repercussions in the game because of the manner in which she did it and the manner in which she made the other people believe who she flipped to, that she was with them for good.
Right. Yeah. And but it was interesting was though was like even when she wasn't with someone, you know, like that scene with Sierra, right, where Sierra gives Sarah the legacy advantage. At that point in the game, Sarah and Sierra were ostensibly on opposite sides of the chessboard, and even so, Sierra, like she could go to Sarah. I was like, we're closer now, but we have some like deep human bond that's you know above all that, and like somehow Sarah was able to make to convince people that they had these really deep bonds.
It's kind of inexplicable, right, as a viewer, because a game like that makes sense from Parvati because she's so flirty, right, or from Kim. But I think because I think you said this kind of to start off this whole know-it-alls, like because Sarah is not as appealing to watch as a viewer, and she'd probably admit this herself with her, like, I think I'm in that category of a bit of a monotone of voice, a bit of a game bot. It's like weird as a viewer who didn't fall in love with her to be like, wait, why is everybody else in love with her? Like,
yeah, what? Yes, that's exactly right. That's exactly right. That's exactly why I think like, I don't think people are going to like respect her game as much as maybe they should, because we didn't feel in love with her. Like the people around her seemed to, and there was always that kind of disconnect. Like, wow, everyone loves Sarah.
And if you take that even farther, it's probably why people as viewers like so much more respect like big strategic games than like flirty games. Because as a viewer, you're never going to fall as in love with someone as the person on the island is. Like as a viewer, you're never going to be as in love with Parvati or Kim as like the person sitting next to them. And Michelle probably, you know, suffered from that same fate.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Because it's those little interactions that like human kindness, like a look in the eyes. Yeah. Like I still feel connected to Troy Zane because like of a glance we shared in the green room for Cambodia, you know, it's like, that's like all, that's all you need, I guess, with me anyway. So, you know, let's talk then about, the other thing was, sorry. And so how did you think Sarah did at Final Travel? Like, how did you think her performance was?
Well, the two other people were terrible, first of all. So she outshone both of them.
Right.
I think Troy Zen put him aside. Like, I think there's not much he could have done. I think Brad really, you know, didn't help his case. But I think she did a good job. I didn't write it all down, but there was moments. I love the moment where she said, like, I'm here because I chose the right people to sit with, which is like a way to compliment everybody else, right? Without being like a total Albert blowhard of being like, you guys are all so wonderful, you know? So, I mean, there was small, I should have written them all down, but I thought she did a really good job of owning up, being honest. What do you think?
Yeah, no, I thought so too. I mean, there's a lot of little moments, and it seemed like she had a playbook of the things you should do at Tribal Council, and she did a lot of them. Like one of them that I noticed was she was. I always come back to this thing that Cochran said about how like you want to take credit for something that's not going to threaten other people. So you don't want to say you're the strongest. You don't want to say you're the most strategic. For Cochran, it was like, I have the best timing. And Sarah said like, oh, I'm super attentive to details. And that's how I won. It's sort of like a similar thing. I have like some like minute superpower, which is like my thing, you know, and that doesn't like take away anything from you, Ozzy, or doesn't take away anything from you, Debbie, but like my attention to detail is why I'm here and I deserve to win. I thought that was really good. So Brad, who I guess, do we agree that Brad lost because he didn't take tie? I mean, that seemed to be what the jury was saying.
I mean, he didn't take a tie. I mean, he lost because he didn't take out Sarah at the two opportunities that he had. And that was baffling to me. Before I watched this episode, I went online and I watched, they actually put the Jury Speaks videos up early this year. They put them up before the finale.
Oh, that's fun.
So I watched a bunch of them, and they're super, everybody on Know-It-Alls, you guys should all go watch them. They're interesting. They're not just right before the finale. They had Jury Speaks kind of after a lot of tribal councils leading up to the finale. And so you saw people's ideas evolve. And Zeke.
Oh, that's cool.
Zeke was a big Brad Culpepper fan, and it kind of slowly waned. What was fascinating to me was almost every single person in these videos said Sarah's playing the best game. Like they maybe said, like, maybe I won't vote for her, but the Sarah's playing the best game. So how is it? I mean, I assume that Brad Culpepper's ego is just so large, but how is it that like all of these jury members recognize Sarah's playing the best game for so long, and yet Brad and Troyson have two opportunities to get her out and don't? It seems like a huge disconnect between, like, you know, what the jury feels and what they recognize.
I don't think, though, that it's necessarily an ego thing for Culpepper. I just think that when you're on the island, your perception of things is so dramatically different from when you're in the jury house. And when you're in the jury house, you have this, like, it's so clear what the consensus is, right? Like that first night, everyone's like, here's what we think. And then you're like, okay, yeah, I think that too. I'm a part of this club, you know? And even if you slightly disagree and you make your opinion known, still, like, the kind of consensus shakes out through debate. And that actually, it's good that we, that sort of that came up now, because I, you know, that sort of like comes into what we think. Well, let's get the, like, let's hold on a sec, cause I want to talk about the new jury structure, but first I want to talk about Brad's game. Do you think, did you think that Brad, so you liked Brad and you kind of felt like you were rooting for him the whole time?
I was rooting for him. I think that he did the thing that an alpha male can't do. He made alliances in the beginning. He got on the bottom. What is he supposed to do? You know, he wins the challenges. I think there's kind of two problems with Brad's game. One is, I think that as a jury member, nobody wants to vote for somebody who they feel like at any moment they could have voted out. Right. Like, I feel like, cause then it's like, well, I could have voted you out that day and it was kind of a toss up and I decided not to. Right. Like, that's not somebody you want to vote for. And I don't think Sarah was often in that position, but Brad was in that position a couple of times when he didn't win immunity and like Andrea went home or something like that.
Yeah.
And so that's one thing against him. And then the other thing is that I think Andrea's line this season about like, it's so important how you send people off and not rubbing salt in the wounds. And I think as much as Sarah made people feel really attached to her, I think that the way Brad sent off Ty probably left a huge bitter taste in the jury's mouth. I think that final, you know, the final couple days for Brad, when he got really excited that, oh my God, I'm going to win this thing, I think that sealed the deal for him.
Yeah. I mean, sending Ty to the jury bench was bad, not just because it meant that Ty wasn't sitting next to him, but also because Ty, who Brad had just been kind of a jerk to, was now the last juror and who's going to come in and be like, Brad is a jerk. And that's like the last thing they hear before they all, you know, go to the final tribal. So let's talk about that, because that was a huge change. And we kind of talked about this a little bit on Twitter. You did not love this evolution.
Oh, sorry. Can I say one more thing though? Sorry.
Oh yeah. Say whatever.
I want to say that, Brad made mistakes of not getting rid of Sarah in those last two opportunities. But you could also say, had the game gone differently, that I think Sarah also made a mistake by not getting rid of Brad, right? Unless you could say this earlier. Because unless you could say, oh, Sarah's so smart that she would know that even if Brad won out, he wasn't going to, you know, he would still take her. Then, okay, fine. But, like, chances are that, like, Brad is not as big of an idiot and takes out Sarah. And in which case, Sarah, like, probably miscalculated on who she should have taken out. Right, like Sarah in the end of the game didn't have the fate in her hands. I know, and maybe I'm misreading it. Maybe we don't see everything on the edit. Even Jeff was like, I really love when Jeff said something to Brad at the end about like, you know, you made this decision that cost you the game, and Sarah, I don't want to take away anything from you. Like, obviously, you probably played a part in the decision that Brad made. Right. I think that's a subtlety that's often missed on Survivor. But it's true that like Sarah didn't, she made so many decisions at the end, and yet she made so many decisions throughout the game, and yet she put her life in the hands of Brad Culpepper at the end. And that's something she probably could have avoided.
Well, you know, and it does come back to like the idea of like Sarah she was the swing vote, but she wasn't necessarily the decision maker, right? She was choosing between A or B for a lot of it, but she wasn't the one who was saying A or B. And in fact, like we saw that's kind of why she first got alienated from Brad's alliance, was she felt like she wasn't actually having a voice in that alliance. And I actually, I mean, not to go too far back in history, but I thought she might have like gotten a little bit like overemphasized that. I mean, even from the little bit we saw, it looked like Brad was doing a good job trying to include her. So let's talk about this new jury format. What's your perspective?
I feel like I'm talking a lot, but I'll give you my perspective. I liked the openness of the, I liked that it was a little more free flowing and that it wasn't 10 people standing up saying something. So I liked the conversation. The one problem with the conversation is that I think it should be a two-way conversation and Jeff doesn't need to be as involved as he was. Like, I think two ways. One is I think the structure of it was kind of absurd. Like, it was too structured. Don't do the outway, outplace, outlast. Just have a conversation.
Yeah.
And then two is, I think you mentioned this on Twitter, is that like the more Jeff is able to talk in these things and not just like be the host who says, okay, it's your turn to speak, the more he can kind of manipulate where the conversation goes. Like, I think even at one point I said, Andrea, like, why don't you tell us about, you know, he actually asked her to speak on something specific. And as somebody who's been in Final Tribal Council and who has somebody who's been there feeling like Jeff wanted the game to go a certain way and that Jeff could have a, could potentially do that and influence it. I know that if that had been like that for my season, I wouldn't have won. So I'm not a fan of it completely, but I liked the fact that it was more of a back and forth. That's where like all the best tribal councils come or moments come from. Like Brandon Hance's moment when he was like, no, 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 or whatever he said, sit down. When it's more of a conversation and less of like, I'm going to sit up and grandstand.
So you may disagree with that. So I actually really, really liked this. I really love this format. I thought that like the old format was getting a little bit stale. I mean, the final tribal has got to be like, it's supposed to be one of the most exciting, crucial parts of the season. And instead you had like 9 people get up and just like grandstand for their like 30 seconds or 3 minutes or whatever. And often it was like 3 people asking like variations of the same question, you know. There was like 1 or 2 good questions, but a lot of it was just dead air. And I thought this opened it up so much.
I agree.
First of all, like the 2 things I liked the most about this were like, one, this gave people who were eloquent and smart, like the Zeke's, you know, and the Aussies who were passionate and who had really distinct opinions, the chance to speak in a couple of places on a couple of themes. And then I thought what I really liked about it the most was that, you know, one thing I really love about Survivor is that this is a game that you don't even know what the target is, because what the jury values is totally subjective. It's just the metagame, like what matters in Survivor is entirely based on what the jury says is going to matter. And we got to see that conversation happening in real time of them saying, I think this matters. No, this is the thing that matters, you know? And it wasn't even like you did this, you know, typically the old juries were like, you did this thing to me and you're a jerk and screw you. And now it was like, you know, no, you were a great alpha player and you had all these challenges. And I really love that. I mean, I can be sometimes cynical about, you know, the guiding of the, in the shaping. I also think that you need, if you have a format like this, you need some kind of hand that is saying, you know, hey, this person hasn't had a chance to speak. This theme isn't being addressed. I agree with you. Outwit, Outplay, Outlast is a little bit too neat. I don't know what the, but you know, because Outlast, it's like, you're all there. Like you all 3 made it. But, you know, I there's some division needs to be made. And maybe it is like the physical, the social, the emotional, and you know, whatever. Like I actually really liked it. I thought it was kind of hard to follow sometimes, but I still found it was like more interesting.
I agree. I think your point about like getting to see the conversation about what they value happen in front of you was really cool. And it made me wonder to myself, like, or made me question unanimous votes in the past.
Yeah.
And think like, okay, sure. Like Jeremy is the best player, but like, I would have loved all of those jury members are different, right? They don't act as a pact. And I would have loved to hear them say, okay, well, like I think Jeremy's the best player because he killed it in new challenges. That's why I'm voting for him. Somebody else to say, actually, I'm going to vote him for because of this reason. And I think that in a lot of ways it helps you untangle like the pact mentality. And I liked hearing Ozzy's thing about like, you did what I couldn't do. And I liked hearing why, you know, it's almost like you got to hear a little bit more that way of the almost of the vote, the reason for the vote.
Yeah,
I agree. But can I ask you a question? Aren't we getting a little sick of the like Zeke thing of standing up and being like, I'm going to be your advocate, or the Aussie thing? Like, who? I don't know who started that.
Zeke was the first one.
Mick was the first.
Not Mick. It's the, well, we call it the David Murphy speech, but you're right. But it is the Eric Cardona speech. Eric Cardona did it for Russell, I guess. Oh, no, for Natalie.
I'm getting a little tired of it. And if I was on the jury, like I would be like, oh, go shut up, shut down. Like you matter no more than I do. And like, you're choosing to value something different than I am. Like your vote counts no more.
I actually think that this mitigates that, because they're not standing there in the spotlight being like, now I'm going to make my big rhetorical flourish. You know, it's like someone's talking and then someone else says, actually, I have something to say about that. And the other thing that I think this does is that, you know, I don't know if there will ever truly be a live tribal council, a final tribal council, but I think this leads to it more. I think typically for tribal council, final tribal, the jury is like, I've got my speech, you know, until you speak, all you're thinking about is like, what's my speech? What's my speech? What's my speech? Then you speak and you're like, okay, what did I say? How did it go? What do people think? Like, am I going to look cool on camera? And like now you have to like sit and listen to the people around you because if you want to engage with them, I think there's a real chance that it might like, you know, improve the show.
So I was disappointed that Brad didn't take that opportunity. Like I thought that Troyzen definitely gave up, but I almost thought that Brad looked defeated as well. And I would have, he's a trial lawyer. I mean, I think he did too much of like trying to debate the facts without trying to like think about the social aspect of that tribal council.
Yeah.
But it seemed like he gave in a little too quickly.
Yeah. I mean, I wonder if that's just what we're seeing, you know, if we're not seeing more fight from him, or maybe because he was so sure that he had it in the bag that he was just completely unprepared to like defend himself. Yeah. He was like, they're going to love me. Like, and actually this is something I wanted to talk to you about. Cause I was watching and I was thinking like, Brad is such a classic old school winner. Like you're saying, you know, he's like the guy who wins all the immunities. He's the alpha male. He's the leader of his group. And then you have someone who, Sarah, who on a previous season, you know, the schemey one who breaks all our bonds and doesn't really win that many challenges and, you know, violates a lot of people's trust, like almost like a Dawn Meehan, right? Like she was like more like Dawn.
Yeah.
And I think in the past, people, I wonder if this is like an old school, new school, or like, you know, game, like big moves era Survivor thing for them to like Sarah, where it's like, oh, it's okay. You know, and I noticed that the people who were speaking up for Sarah the most were like Zeke and Michaela, both of whom are millennials, you know, and the people who were speaking up for Brad were like Ozzy and Debbie, who are, you know, older now, as sad as it is to say about young Ozzy. And I wonder if it is like kind of like a generational thing.
I'm with you. And again, I hope nothing, not to take away from Sarah's victory at all, but I think the one person who was trying to articulate what you're saying right now was Ozzy.
Yeah.
And he was trying to say, like, loyalty matters. The way in which you play the game matters. And I think, unfortunately, he was like, he's such a badass, just like I'm a badass, that he didn't have to. You know, like, that's not the best way to say it. But I do think that people have tried to convince themselves that it doesn't matter if somebody hurts my feelings.
Right.
Right. It's like they're trying to convince themselves, I'm so angry, but I'm not angry, because they feel like that's how they should be. Mm-hmm. I think I do prefer a little bit more of like the, I think that bitterness is one of many emotions that can go into a survivor boat. And I think that we have swung so far to like taking all emotion out of the vote to trying to grade people's games.
Right.
And I would love to find some kind of middle ground there.
Yeah, it's like it's a completely amoral or in a post-truth world where it's like, you know, nothing matters, you know, except like what you know, who got to the end, basically, who made the most moves. And I kind of agree. Like, I think you're right. Ozzy did say that a couple of times where he was like, you know, you didn't have to play. I think at one point it's like you didn't have to play the way you played, or there was another time when he said something along the lines of like, basically what I've been saying, like, we're the ones who determine what's important here.
And unfortunately, Ozzy and Debbie are not the people you want pleading your case. I think that's fair.
Well, yeah, I guess I wonder like what, you know, what Cerie's perspective is. You know, she's playing in season, you know, in Panama. Is that season 12? Yeah. So
wait, who voted? Who was 13, the first, 13. Who was the third vote for Culpepper? Was it?
I actually don't know. Either Haley or Sierra, right? I assumed it would be Sierra.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
Well, and that was interesting too, because like the whole Sierra thing where like they were like, Sierra was really the mastermind. And maybe she was, but you know, because Sierra's on the jury, she has a lot of time to sort of spin that narrative and that kind of
Can we rewind? Cause you skipped over all the idols.
Oh yeah. No, well, I mean, you mean like Idol Apocalypse? No. We're coming to that.
We're not doing things in order.
We're doing in reverse order. The big names like Sarah wins.
Should have been.
exactly. Yeah. Actually, that's what I got. Well, the other thing I wanted to say was that Brad's story all season was about Monica, right? It was all about his following in Monica's footsteps, and just like Monica, he's the runner-up. Okay, that was it.
That was good. That was
thanks,
good.
Thanks. So yeah, now the crazy final six tribal council.
What'd you think? I was disappointed.
I was too, you know, because it seemed, well, I guess there's not that much craziness when like everyone's immune. There's like nothing. Yeah. So a lot of people on Twitter were saying, you know, this is the problem with all these advantages and idols. You know, it's too much. That's how you get a legend like Cerie going out of the game without even a vote against her. What's your take on that?
Well, so I thought my mom said something really, I'm at my parents' house right now and I watched my parents. And I thought my mom said something really good, which was, she said it felt like playing Monopoly with her brothers growing up, who would just put like $500 in free parking all the time and like had way too much money in the Monopoly game. And so everybody always had like all this money. And so the game, so the game didn't work, right? Like nobody ever lost. And that's a little bit how it felt. Like I felt like they'd added so much that the game broke. Like that didn't seem like it should have been an outcome of the game. To me, it's sad if there is not a path to victory without an idol at one specific moment in a game. And that's all key. That's kind of the reason, right? I'd imagine that they don't allow idols to be played at the final four. Like they want to put some kind of limit on like, what are the idol's powers? And I think as much as Jeff is going to try to tout this as like, oh, one of a kind moment, I think it was a fail.
I disagree. So my perspective is that this was, you know, this was an unusual moment, but it wasn't like we've seen like 60 idols play this season. The reason that this sort of paid off on one moment was that people had been hoarding their idols. They'd been saving them. You know, Troyzan had gotten one, you know, way back in the day. You know, Ty had been holding his two idols. You know, very easily could have happened that Ty played one that night and saved the other one for himself, and Aubrey was voted out and Troyzan held his idol. You know, I mean, totally a reasonable thing that could have happened. It just happened that the people who found idols were never really in danger. And the fact that Ty didn't play his idols was almost more drama all season long than him actually playing his idols with like these crazy tribal councils when Ty is just like sitting there stony faced. So it didn't bother me. I understand why people would say that, you know, like idol apocalypse and the game is broken, but like this is one moment. This is one tribal council, and it's a payoff of like a season long like of buildup, basically.
I get your argument. I would think though, if I was CBS right now, I'd be like, shit, you know, our favorite player of the season got basically idled out at this moment. Like, how do we prevent this from happening again? Whether or not it was like, it was a good moment, but like, I do wonder, like, maybe they should have more of those idols that you can only play at a specific time. Like, I feel like if there was more of those.
Oh, I hate that.
Well, people are so eager to make a big move these days that I feel like if they had an idol that could only be played when 14 people are left, whoever owned it would like probably try to make a big move with it just so that they could have that like on their stupid fucking resume.
family podcast.
And then that would be like a way to kind of prevent this whole like five idols being played at the same time. I love Ceri, you know, that was a sad thing.
But Ceri, the interesting, I mean, like Ceri's game was blown last week, right? Like this was just like her reaping, you know, the sort of fallout of the previous episode.
Actually, it was Ty's game who was more blown, which kind of blew me.
Well, but when Ceri lost Michaela, I mean, Ceri basically, right? Like, the crazy thing is looking back like a week ago is that Ceri really did have a path to the end. You know, it was like Ceri, Sarah, and Michaela, like that was a real thing that really could have gone all the way. And then that whole stupid, I mean, I guess if Ty was voting for Sarah and Sarah didn't believe her, like what could Sarah have realistically, like what could Ceri have done?
Either Ceri versus Sarah at the final tribal council would have been incredible. Cause I think people would have felt like they wanted to vote for Ceri because she is like Ceri. But I think the Sarah would have still had the same, you know, resume that she would be going in with. That would have been a cool tribal council.
No, it's not. Yeah. I don't know. That would have been interesting. I don't think Ceri's losing. I mean, I argued about this with Rob last week. I kind of took the point that like you're not just going to give like a lifetime achievement award to Ceri. She has to do something to deserve it. But and then I think both of the exit interviews of last week, they were like, Ceri's amazing. You know, she would have won.
She's amazing.
Yeah. Ceri legend. Oh, the crazy thing. So someone tweeted to me this. Ceri has only gotten 8 votes against her. She's been voted out 4 times and has never been voted out by like a majority vote. In Panama, she lost a fire making challenge to the final 4. In Heroes versus Villains, there was a split vote, and Tom Westman played an idol. In Micronesia, right, she was the final 3, and she kind of lost, you know, just the 1-0-0 vote basically. And now here again. No votes. So can't take out Ceri through normal means. She's like one of those, you know, like you have to dip your sword in leafy or whatever.
That's great.
Okay. And what about the finale? I don't want to go too long. What do you think of the finale? Anything exciting happening?
I have so many other questions for you.
Oh, no, we got more to go. We got questions to come from the audience and, you know.
Hopefully you'll ask my questions. Finale, you mean the reunion show?
The reunion show, yeah.
Cochran looked nice. They look good.
What did you think of that Cochran and Aubrey thing? Did that? Were you excited about that possibility?
No. Yeah, Cochran's my bae. Also, Aubrey says one moment that he's her dad. I mean, it's disgusting.
You're saying that Aubrey's promoting incest?
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, Aubrey has a boyfriend, right?
Aubrey does have a boyfriend.
It's so hot. It's so
I know.
Hot.
I'm really hot. It's hot in both of our screens.
I can't turn the air conditioning on because it's so loud. This is terrible.
Take your shirt off.
Yeah. So well, I feel like the finale, what do you think? Like, were there like big moments? There was like, it was interesting that Brad really didn't want that, like, would you have won? Because I always wanted the, like, would you have beaten Aaron moment. Like, because look, I could have won. I was really close to winning, you know? It's funny that Brad didn't want that.
I felt for Probst in that situation. Like, come on, dude. It's a live show. Like, a little bit of, you know, saying no. But it got to a point where if I was, like, a producer on that show, I'd be kind of pissed at him. Like, let the thing keep moving.
Yeah. The whole tie hug. It's like, there's a lot of people waiting in the back. Like, let's move it along.
I mean, I think even Monica cut off Sarah before she could hug her husband. Like, it was a lot of distractions. I mean, Sarah did the same thing that she did in the show, which is the whole thing, like with the transgender stuff on the show. After, you know, Zeke came out, there was a lot of like, I can't believe that I'm accepting Zeke because he's transgender. And then there was this weird stuff in the reunion, like, I can't believe my family accepted me because I know a transgender. Yeah. I mean, I think everybody takes baby steps, you know. So I think that it's a good thing, but it's also just, it just shows another world outside of the one I live in.
I know. I mean, for sure that's true. It's like, look at how virtuous my family is for like not thinking Zeke is a monster, you know, but also like, you're right. Like
it's a step forward.
Yes. And these are people who have these preconceptions and like, you can't just expect them to suddenly like, you know, have their like third eye open up and then they're woke in like one morning. Yeah. You know, you gotta like, you know, like you said, baby steps. So,
what else happened at the reunion? I don't know. I'm sorry. It was shocking to me at that reunion, seeing all those people in the back row who got so little airtime. I'm like, I cannot believe that there is such a thing. Could you have imagined 3 years ago that there's such a thing as a reunion in Survivor that involves Malcolm speaking only for 5 seconds?
And Tony didn't talk. Well, Tony didn't even say a word, I don't think, right?
It's insane. JT was up there. Tony, I think, no, that he had like a little bit of, at the moment when Sarah talked.
When Sarah was talking about him. Sarah did a Tony impression, which I think was about as much as Tony actually spoke. And we got
no little children in the audience though, so that was good.
That was good. Yeah, and it moved along. I thought it was good. You know, you got some Sandra, got that Sierra moment. I'm trying to think of what else happened of interest in the finale itself. I mean, you had you know, Zeke obviously giving Josh Wiggler a shout out, which was the highlight of the whole show, I think, for everybody, for me and everybody listening to this. Okay. Yeah. All right. And next season, heroes versus healers versus hustlers. Are you excited about it?
I'm psyched. I mean, you know, not judging anything until it happens. Stupid name, but the cast, I guess, looked fine.
That bellhop was like,
no, the bellhop was amazing.
Yeah. It's like the new Cochrane.
I have to say, the bellhop, actually, I think the bellhop is going to be so much closer to Cochran than all the Cochran wannabes that have come.
Oh, I totally Cochran. Agree. Everyone
right? Like, seems so genuine.
He actually seems kind of, Cochran-y in the way that, like, everybody else, like, does not actually have that sort of.
Yeah. Like, everybody else is a little bit too much, no offense, too much of, like, you know, or, I feel like there's been 10 rap columnists on the show since Cochran.
10 and, what? Like,
rap, R-H-R.
Okay.
Like, this guy seems, I don't know his background. Maybe he's an RAP.
Whatever you're about to say about RAP columnists, you're in the wrong venue, okay?
I'm loving this guy. I have so such high hopes for this guy. Can we rewind this? Is this live?
Good Lord. Well, I actually really like the idea for the next season. When I first heard of it, I thought it was kind of stupid. Heroes versus healers versus hustlers. But I kind of like the idea of focusing on people's positive attributes. Yeah. Now, this is not the first time that this has ever happened. You know, certainly white collar, no blue collar, no collar. They were like, you got it. Yeah. And like, you know, but I think anything that brings something interesting out of people, and that's what was good about Game Changers, was that it really stepped up the craziness just by being like, are you a game changer? Are you a game changer? And I think I like that. And it's even better with something like Heroes, because it's like, am I a hero or am I going to be the heroic villain? You know, I think there's fun there.
Well, what I also really like about it is I hope it's going to correct something that I think was a big problem in Game Changers, which was my disappointment in Game Changers was even despite all the game-changing moments, I don't feel like there was any cohesive storyline. Like, I couldn't tell you what Sarah's story, maybe I could with Sarah, but like, a lot of people couldn't tell you what their story was from the beginning to the end. And it was like too many swaps. And because they weren't on tribes that meant anything in the beginning, like, and because the tribes switched so often, I like a story. Like and I think that when you have tribes where people really cling to these personas, and I think it's especially true when you have Brains, Bronze, and Beauty, people look a certain way, like it makes it easier for a viewer throughout the game. And I think those bonds tend to stick a little more. So you're like, oh, well, what happened in this season was the heroes are really strong and won all the challenges. And then the heroes like started to realize they couldn't beat each other because they were all so nice at the final tribal council. So they started to, you know, like I like having that story. I mean,
yeah, I think people felt like part of the problem was one swap too many, which I kind of agree with, which is like with that extra swap, it like it really became hard to find. Like you know, I like when Sarah's on the beach talking to Ty tonight and she was like, I've, you know, been with you the most since the very beginning. I was like,
beats me.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. Yeah. And I think like if you had just one fewer swaps, it would have been able, you know, go 2 to 3 and then merge or 3 to 2 and then merge. But like, I think that extra swap just like it does add chaos to the end, which is really fun, but it makes it much harder to kind of track the different relationships. And so I think the one thing people like everyone I've spoken to has said is that they kind of felt like didn't feel connected to the season because they had trouble keeping track of like who actually cared about who and what people's deals were. So Bright Tail Faux Pas tweets, how can we not talk about the tiebreaker? That's a great question. What did you think of the tiebreaker? We finally learned what the tiebreaker is.
I can't believe that. Was that the presumed tiebreaker? Because it makes a lot of sense. I like the tiebreaker.
I mean, I've heard so many things. Like, I've heard that it's going to be like America's vote. I've heard they go to fire. That. I've heard there's like a challenge on the spot. You know, there's like
love this. I mean, basically in this season, right, Troyzen was almost a jury member. Like, if somebody had voted, well, not if they voted somebody out next, but like, the person who's not involved, who's still, you know, had played with these people, I like it. I think it makes sense. I wonder if they should do like one of those reboot votes that they do in ties, although they now don't do them in ties. I don't know if anybody would change their vote. But the bigger question for me is, given that season 35 is coming, do you think they announce it because it happens on 35?
But why? That wouldn't make sense. I mean, I saw that on Twitter, but like, why would they? Then they would spoil that. Like, why would they not then just reveal it when it happens on 35? Like, why would they give it away now? I thought the other thing that I saw proposed on Twitter was that they said it because they wanted to make it likelier to happen. You know, that maybe the question of it like kept people from doing it. You know, from no one wanted to risk a tie because they didn't know what would occur. Yeah,
that's a really good point. That'd be crazy.
So what else, Sophie? What are your other questions or thoughts before we take it over to viewers?
So I have a question for you. I love Aubrey. I think she's a sweetie.
Yeah.
Is she a good player? Did she play well at all this season?
Oh, we didn't see enough of her. It's hard to say. And I think
that's the problem here. Because I was like, oh my God, what did Aubrey do? She did nothing.
But we don't know. I mean, I'm sure Aubrey is there every day. You know, well, it's for poor Aubrey. It was funny. Like she really was that she had this meme of her like as the Grim Reaper. Every single one of her allies got taken out. Yeah. You know, she like with Tony, Tony's gone. She's with JT, JT's gone. Andrea's gone. She's not gone, right? That's what she did. Yeah. She managed to avoid the axe.
Yeah.
It's hard to say because like I think too that a lot of what happens is when a person is voted out in that kind of like nebulous five spot, like there's no real story payoff there. So it's like hard to build up to a story to like that 30-second like all right, see ya, Aubrey, you know, out the door.
Yeah.
You know, it's what happened basically with like Will Wall and Sunday Berquist last year in their double boot last season. All right, should we open up to viewers?
Yeah, let's do it.
Our listeners or whatever. All right, Chris Fernandez wants to know, does this once and for all prove Rob's theory right of playing as your previous season winner?
Yeah, I just burped. Who else has done that?
Well, yeah, that's, I mean, the thing that Rob has said and others have said is that, you know, people play like the winner of their previous season. I actually don't think. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, this is certainly someone who's doing that. And you know,
I like that they Cochran emulated me.
Well, he did. I mean, so he gives you a lot of credit for a lot of his gameplay. And in many ways, he did, right? Like Cochran was to Philip as you were to Coach in many ways, you know, kind of like hyping up this sort of larger than life figure who was the center point around which, you know,
I think the theory makes a ton of sense, right? Like, you go in Survivor, you see somebody win Survivor, and like, that is what it means to win Survivor for you, despite all of the survivors you've seen on TV. Like, you know, that's what's in your brain.
I lost a tooth in Cambodia.
Gross. Okay. That seemed like a non sequitur.
No. JT lost a tooth in Tokyo. Oh. That was a deep cut.
So I wonder if the next All-Star season, we should all analyze the winners of the people out there's previous seasons and then figure out if they're all playing like their winners, who's more likely to win.
People talk about it. Talk about it. I mean, I think a lot of it, though, I actually think a lot of it is like everyone wants to play like Tony now. You know, I think it's less like people are playing like any, like I was trying to play like Tony, you know, like I think that's what everyone is trying to do. And you know, it just happens that Cagayan, like those guys are fantastic, and they keep coming back. So you know, bring back all of the Cagayan cast. I would be very happy to see top Morgan. To bottom, Bryce, Morgan, LJ. You know, I love LJ. You know, bring them all back. I would be very, very happy with that. All right, you want to take the next question? Can you see them?
Nope.
Just click over on the screen. You don't see them in the Google.
I do see them. Okay. Right. Oh, cool. I'm like Andrea now. So Lita TV says, so when do the third finalist? Oh, wait one second. So this doesn't make sense. This is not my fault. So when do the third finalists vote? After they read the votes months later or on day 39, where Jeff would have to tell them it's a tie?
I think in the moment is the way I would guess that.
My understanding is that like a producer, two producers or a producer and Jeff, there's a small number of people who read the votes at the time.
Right.
Check that.
I agree. And I think that people, Don Replogle says, why didn't Sarah vote with Ty at the final four? What would have been the downside? And I asked this question on Twitter too. It's like, so at the final four, Ty proposed, like, let's force a fire making competition. And Sarah's like, oh, I don't know. But if Sarah does it with Ty, either she's safe because the vote is on Ty, or she's not safe, but she has a chance to make fire rather than being eliminated. I actually heard some great responses on Twitter about why she would do this, but I wanted to get your perspective.
Well, I assume that she knew that Ty was going home and that she had a lot of faith in that. And if that's the case, like for me, in my opinion, it's crazy for her to even go to the tribal council with Ty and not Troyson. Like, why would you be? To me, it seemed like the way Ty was asking for it, Ty knew he was going home. Sarah knew he was going home. And so why would Sarah risk going to the final tribal council with Ty when she put Troyzan is terrible? Like, also seen as a bad move in front of the jury to take Ty instead of Troyzan.
And Troyzan's going to be a vote for Brad, whereas Ty's going to be a vote for her. There's a lot of good reasons to not do it. I mean, just from like, if she's pretty sure that Ty is the one going home, which it sounds like she was, you know, you get out there. You know, you hope that you've got the right read on people by day 38. All right. Bananas wants to know, does anyone else think it's an advantage that Brad was the only one wearing a hat in the final five immunity challenge? Which was the final five immunity challenge?
Was that the maze or was that the slide? No,
probably, maybe
it was the maze. I don't know. Of course it's an advantage.
Because the sun's not in his eyes?
I don't know. Everybody has advantages and disadvantages.
Yeah. It's always an advantage to wear a hat, though. The sun is blinding. All right. You want to take the next one?
Sure. Scott Schiffer. Whom from this cast would you most and least like to see return another season?
Oh, that's a good one.
Ooh, that's a great one. So I actually would love to see Sarah return. Like, after she played such a great game, I think that this is, in a lot of ways, wasn't a returning season for her because she didn't have... She wasn't as big of a name. Like, I would like to see her go in with that big target.
Yes.
And I would like her to see her like do the same thing over again.
See, I actually think I disagree with you. I actually think she could, because I think her superpower was these really strong bonds she built with people. And I think that's the skill that's like the most translatable, right? It's like the two things that you need are like, you have to have great reads on people and you have to be able to build strong bonds with people. And like the rest of it is like, you know, counting, you know, the rest of Survivor is like, I got four and they got three, you know?
Although the jury was all like, and I thought I had a really good bond with you until you voted me out. And I wonder if on the next season, right, when she forms these bond, everybody is going to be much more likely to be like, but is this a Sarah bond or is this a, you know?
Right. I don't know.
I would love to see it.
Yeah, it'd be interesting. And I also bet the other thing that I'll bet about Sarah on the next time out is she has a much bigger on-camera presence, because I think she's gotten a lot of blowback about like how bad she was. So I think, I mean, I certainly came out, you know, guns blazing for that reason, and I'm sure she will as well.
Do you think she'll like put on a Tony voice for the whole season?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Would you want to ally with Sarah on an all winter season, Sophie?
Yeah.
Sure. Why not? Right.
I'm a yes man.
Yeah. Yeah.
Who do you not want to see? Like, who's over for you? And don't say Troy Zan, because that's obvious.
I disagree about it. You're talking to the wrong guy about Troy Zan. I love Troy Zan. I want to see Troy Zan as much as possible. In fact, I actually thought, like, come on, what a beautiful final speech he gave. You know, I want to see more Troy Zan.
So my question for you is, take Malcolm, Sandra, Ceri, Ozzy.
Mm-hmm.
Or Malcolm, Sandra, and Ceri. Like, which of those, Malcolm, Sandra, Ceri, Tony. Okay. Which of those four would you say retire? Don't want to see again.
Oh God, Malcolm, Sandra. I guess Sandra. I mean, I love them all, but like, if I had to pick one, I mean, you can't say Ceri. We have Malcolm, Sandra, Ceri, and who?
Malcolm, Sandra, Ceri, Tony.
Oh God, I mean, Tony, you can't say get rid of, and Ceri, you can't get rid of. You got to say Tony. Yes, I mean, I bet some people will be like, you know, Tony did his shtick. I bet Tony might feel, some people might feel like Tony's all shtick. I bet on try three, Tony's going to have a much better chance. God, this is a tough one. So Malcolm, Sandra, Ceri, and who?
Tony.
Malcolm. So it's Malcolm or Sandra. I can't choose. What do you think?
I think I retire. God, it's so fucking hard. I think I retire Tony. I'm more of like in the camp of Tony's a shtick. And the thing is, if Ozzy was in that group, I might not even retire Ozzy. I have like a resurgence of respect for Ozzy after this. Ooh.
Yeah. The Sandra thing, it's like she's Superman. She's too good. It's like, you know, you don't need to see Superman compete. Like, they only got Superman because they had like a shot. You know, it's like, I know she's going to be amazing. You know, I want to see like flawed characters. Can they overcome their flaws? That's the way I feel about like Malcolm, who's like too handsome for this world, or like Tony, who can't like control himself. You know, Ceri is this person who's like come so close so many times. You know, like I would cast those like flawed protagonists rather than the Superman.
Do you think by season 40 we can have a cast of like the unretirables, which will be all these kind of people, and then they'll just play Survivor every year?
No, that sounds so terrible.
So with different themes each time, they put them into different groups.
Yeah. Are there any like strange picks? Any like oddball picks for you? Who you liked from this season? Who you didn't think?
I go back and forth on Haley. I almost wouldn't mind seeing Haley again.
I disagree. I do not need to see Haley anymore. Haley, if you're listening, I'm sorry. You're probably not listening. But I feel like she brought nothing to the table in Worlds Apart and brought nothing to the table this time. I felt like she has almost nothing to say in Tribal Council. Not to come out guns blazing, but it's like,
listen, when you have a cast, you have to have a well-rounded cast, and you have to have your comedic relief, and you have to have your you have to have your extras. And Haley is like a weird fucking girl. And if you're going to have like a hot girl in the season, you know, why not?
Even you'd think that she would have had a more of a voice in this sort of like a lawyer in that like crazy roundtable final tribal. But she was all she basically said was like, man, this sure was interesting. I learned some things. What?
Yeah, exactly. I don't know.
Yeah, it's a tough one. It's a pickle. Where do you think Sarah rates as a winner, and where do you think this season rates overall?
Throw out some winners, and I'll tell you, like, Sarah above or below. Like, she's below Kim Spradlin, who you compared her to.
Well, did I compare her to her? I thought you compared her to her.
The first thing you said in this episode was, like, she played like Kim Spradlin.
I don't think I said that. Did I say that?
Mm-hmm.
This seems like a very, very fact checkable thing.
Post truth these days. So.
Yeah. I think you may have said that. Okay. Who won last season? Adam.
Adam. She's better than Adam.
Why?
I was never that impressed with Adam. I don't.
This is a weird road to go down. Well, what do you think of this season? So overall, Survivor Game Changers. Like, let's like close the book on Survivor Game. Although I'm sure Rob, let's not close the book, because we have to leave the book open for Rob's, you know, 60 different podcasts he's going to have this week with the different exit interviews with whomever he's wrapping it up with tomorrow, and with all the crazy fun, and, you know, the Wiggler and David and you know, all those people, you know, all those recappers who you're so repulsed by.
Yeah. I mean, I think Survivor Game Changers was like a roller coaster where there's tons of ups, tons of downs, but like there's exciting every week. Something's happening. Legacy advantage. You get that. Every episode was exciting, but yeah. Like at the end of the season, you're back where you started. Like, I don't think there was much movement, and I feel like it's gone in a second. I'm not going to remember much of what happened later. So I think week to week fun, you know, nice to see a lot of our old players back again. But what's crazy is you have all these huge names in the season. And yet I still think that like the moments of heroes versus villains and the story of heroes versus villains will always be so much more stuck in my brain than like the fact that all of these, you know, huge players were on this season together. I think we're going to even forget this season happened. Oh, that was mean. I didn't mean that. That's sorry.
Well, the thing was, though, like that was the first time they'd brought, I mean, I brought people back in 12 seasons, and they brought these all these great players back from the history of the show. I mean, that really did sort of have a more iconic feel to it. Whereas, you know, now they're kind of like taking some deeper cuts. So one last question here, Sophie. Fat Tyson wants to know, Stephen and Sophie, how do you think you would have done with the new jury structure?
Is he asking
both of us?
Our seasons? I would have lost.
You really think that?
Oh, 100%. Like I sat in tribal council thinking, like crossing my fingers behind my back that it would be over. And I remember after we had our opening statements and all the questions, Jeff said, we're going to have now closing statements. And I was like, when have they ever had closing statements? Like Jeff's just doing that to let coach have one more opportunity to say the right thing.
No, they used to always have closing statements.
Okay. Well, I didn't realize that. And I was convinced that it was like a plot against me. because I just knew that it would just, if somebody could just get through coach's brain of like, this is what you need to say. I felt like he was this close to saying it. And I think in an open forum with, you know, Cochran being able to not just stand up once, but to rebut everybody and you know, Probst getting to say, Cochran, why don't you tell us again why you love coach? Like I would have lost. People on my season were ready to vote for coach if he said the right thing. I was betting on the fact that coach was such an egomaniac and so not emotionally intelligent that he wasn't going to be able to pick up on what that was. But that was in that situation. I don't know. What do you think?
Well, but it's interesting because if you actually look at how the votes came down, right, all of the Savai'i people voted for you, right? Because it didn't seem like this was like an individual vote. It seemed like it was a party line vote, right? Where you got the Savai'i votes and Coach got the Upolu votes with like maybe some crossover. But like to me, that seemed like this was one group of people that was going to vote for Sophie and like that team. And this was another group of people that was going to vote for coach. Like that team was voting for coach. And like, I didn't watching your tribal council. I didn't think like, oh, if coach like says the magic word, they're all going to like switch their minds.
That's not how I felt sitting there. And Ozzy's was the first one to stand up in my final tribal council. And he said the first words that came out of his mind were coach, this is your game to lose.
Yeah.
Like, we're all listening for something basically. And who knows, maybe that was just blabber talk, but I felt in that tribal council, like I knew what those Savai'i people wanted to hear. I didn't think coach was going to say it, but I thought that he might. And I think that in a different kind of forum, he might've come to it, right? He would have been more prodded to it. What about you? Like if JT had been able to speak more with him?
I don't think there was a scenario where I was beating JT. I think for me, what would have helped was catching that final ball in the final immunity challenge and then going with Aaron, in which case I think either format I would have won in, but that's not something I live with every day. All right. That's it. Sophie, one last question. Scott Schiffer. Sophie, would you return for a Survivor legend / winner season?
As a legend or as a winner?
That's right. They couldn't cast you. Not that it's too hard. Yeah.
Maybe.
All right. Well, Sophie, thank you so much for being here. Once again, thanks to Scott St. Pierre for producing this, and to everybody watching. Thank you so much to everyone listening later, you know, at home, and who've downloaded it in whatever format you're consuming this. Thank you so much for being with us tonight, for being with us all season. It's truly one of the most. It's the most fun things that I do that I look forward to every week is getting to talk to Rob and unfortunately today, Sophie, and engaging with all of you every week and glad to connect with you. Glad to like get your different perspectives on what happened. Typically when I need something intelligent to say, I'll ask Twitter and then steal someone's response. So thank you for all of you for making me look smart and tune in. I know Rob will have a lot of podcasts coming up this week. It'll be really interesting to see, you know, what Sarah says. If someone can explain why Sarah stole Ty's vote, I'm sure an interview with Suri, interview with Culpepper, interview with Troyzan. Let's find out, you know, why he's blocking everyone on Twitter. All the rest. So good night, everyone. And thanks for staying up late. Survive the knowing.